Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, text 32. Maitreya Uvacha,
Maitreya Uvacha,
Iti Anukrosha Hridayo,
Iti Anukrosha Hridayo,
Bhagavan Hartan Chivaha,
Bhagavan Hartan Chivaha,
Bhadanjalindra Japutra,
Iti,
thus, Anukrusha Hridaya, very kind hearted,
Bhagavan,
the Lord,
says,
Ta,
unto the Prachetas,
Shiva,
Lord Shiva,
Buddha Anjalin,
who were standing with folded hands.
Rajaputra,
the sons of the king.
Narayana Paraha,
Lord Shiva, the great devotee of Narayan.
Vachaha,
words.
The great sage Maitreya continued, out of his causeless mercy, the exalted personality Lord Shiva, a great devotee of Lord Narayan, continued to speak to the king's sons, who were standing with folded hands. Purport. Lord Shiva voluntarily came to bless the sons of the king as well as do something beneficial for them. He personally chanted the mantra so that the mantra would be more powerful, and he advised that the mantra be chanted by the king's sons, the Rajaputras. When a mantra is chanted by a great devotee, the mantra becomes more powerful. Although the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is powerful in itself, a disciple of an initiation receives the mantra from his spiritual master. For when the mantra is chanted by the spiritual master, it becomes more powerful. Lord Shiva advised the sons of the king to hear him attentively, for inattentive hearing is offense. Hare Krishna. Kitchen. We are back. Back with you this morning to speak about Lord Krishna and his devotees, the Narayana Para. A Narayana Para is considered most auspicious. It is said that if one gives donations, and if one gives donations to the needy, that in the next life, one gets that same amount that one gave, one gets it back. But if one gives to a qualified brahmana, then one gets it back multifold. But when one gives it to a Narayana Para, then it comes back unlimited. So one is greatly benefited. So a Narayana Para devotee is very powerful. We see many examples of Narayana Para devotees. We think of Maharaj Ambarish, who somehow or other was fasting and was in a difficult position because Durvasa Muni came. And just at the time of the Paran, just at the time of breaking the fast, Durvasa Muni appeared, and it is, as a guest, it's not appropriate to eat before a guest has eaten. First, the guest should eat. So, what to do now? He had to eat to break the fast, and yet he could not eat because he had to respect his guests. So what to do? And then he consulted various brahmanas, and the brahmanas said, well, you can take some water because water breaks the fast and it does not break the fast. So in this way you break the fast and you don't break the fast. Take some water. So the king took some water. And Durvasa Muni, who had mystic power, was able to perceive that the king had broken his fast and therefore disrespected him, and he just created this demon which was meant to kill the king. But anyway, what happened was that it really displeased the Lord, because Maharaj Ambarish was such a devotee, a Narayana Para or a Mat Para, one who is completely absorbed in worshipping Krishna. And then we see that the Sudarshan Chakra began chasing Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni, he was able by mystic power to go out of the material universe. So like that is mystic power. He was able to go before Lord Vishnu to the Vaikuntha Lokas. So he met Lord Narayan himself, and he asked to be relieved from this Sudarshan Chakra. And Lord Narayan said, "Nothing I can do. Nothing. It's very simple. Nothing I can do. When you've offended my devotee, then only my devotee, when he forgives you, he can relieve you. I cannot." So in this way, we see that the power of Maharaj Ambarish was greater than the power of Durvasa Muni, although Durvasa Muni was such a powerful yogi, such a powerful brahmana, with so much tapas. So powerful than the power of tapas, powerful than Brahma Tejas, is the Tejas, or the power of the devotee. That is what we understand. Because the devotee, sadavo ridiyamayam sadhanam ridiyantvaham mat anyate na janati naham tevyama nagapi, a devotee has touched the heart of Krishna. And he is always residing in the heart of Krishna, and Krishna is residing in his heart. And thus, they have a deep loving exchange. And service to the Lord is never ritualistic, and therefore it is always done with love, never out of duty, but out of love. In that way, a devotee becomes very powerful. And Srila Prabhupada is saying here, when a mantra is chanted by a great devotee, the mantra becomes more powerful. Lord Shiva chanted the mantra personally for the Pachitas. So the mantra becomes more powerful in so many ways. There are blessings. The blessings come there. Everything becomes touched and blessed by the pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada traveled around the world, and he created many, many tirthas. He created many holy places. It is said that tirtha tirthanti kurvanti, that a devotee is a place of pilgrimage. He is a place of pilgrimage. But a devotee is more than a place of pilgrimage, he also creates places of pilgrimage. Many places where Prabhupada went were transformed. And I experienced that in Tonkin Square Park. Because somehow or other, many years I was in Vrindavan, and I saw that many devotees were hugging trees, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Somehow or other, I never got myself to hug trees. Hug a tree. Never did it, you know. But when I was in this Tonkin Square Park, and I saw that tree where Prabhupada started this movement, I thought, okay, this time I'm going to hug the tree. So I went up to the tree and I hugged it, you know, and thinking, what do I do now? So I thought, well, I should pray for something. And I thought, yeah, what do I pray for under this tree? I thought, I should pray for the power to spread Krishna consciousness. So I was praying in this way. Next moment, I stopped praying, I turned around, and there was a boy standing under the tree. And he said, "What do I have to do to become a monk like you?" It's a desire tree, if you have any doubt about it. It's not an ordinary tree at all. That tree, I don't know if the tree came from the spiritual world, you know, waiting for Prabhupada to come, or if Prabhupada, just by chanting under that tree, transformed it into a tree of the spiritual world. That I don't know. But I tell you one thing, it's a desire tree, a kalpataru. So when you go, if you ever go to New York, don't forget to pray under that tree. And if you do, be careful what you pray for, because it comes true. Yeah? I can tell you that. So Prabhupada created so many holy places everywhere in the world. The matchless gift storefront. It is just completely vibrating. Vibrating with the effect of Prabhupada's chanting. Prabhupada's kirtan, with such a desire, to transform, all the conditioned living beings. Last night someone asked me, oh, what service do you like the most? Kirtan? I don't know. Music, yeah, it's nice, you know, it is nice. Harmonium or some other instrument, nice. I mean, I like these things. But more than that, you may think that I'm playing the harmonium during kirtan, but I'm not. I am playing the people. That is a Swami's business. He's playing the people. He's playing the conditioned souls. He's somehow or other trying to bring them closer to Krishna. Somehow or other trying to get some taste there. Somehow or other put the ecstasy a little up, you know, just like you take the heat of the flame under the pot a little higher, so we turn up the ecstasy temperature a little bit. That's the idea. And Prabhupada was doing it. He did it in Duncan Square Park under that tree. He did it in matchless gifts. And because of his extraordinary love for Krishna, therefore his chanting was not just repeating the mantra. No, along with that chanting, there was Prabhupada's love. Right? His love for Krishna. So that love for Krishna was the power. Not just some mystic power comes in when the great Narayana Para devotee is chanting the name. The Shakti of the Shtar Bala, the Shakti of this devotee is going into the mantra, and then the mantra becomes very powerful. Like this? We were doing a house program, and they asked if one of the devotees could do the offering. So he asked two people, come. He took his Harinam chadar, said, hold up this chadar. They were holding up the chadar like a curtain behind, all the preparations were on the table. And then he went behind that chadar. And then suddenly, so much smoke came from behind that chadar. He lit a whole bundle of incense. And so much smoke came from everyone said, this is really prasad. This is real prasad. So much smoke. This is real prasad. So this is the idea of shakti. Right? The shakti is put in there. The Shakti is present. But this is not how we understand it. We understand it as the bhakti. When Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he was wanting to go to Vrindavan, but he was so overwhelmed by Krishna praying, he couldn't find the way. So he wound up somewhere in North Bengal. Nityananda followed him, and Nityananda somehow or other had said, I will bring the Lord to the house of Advaita. So when Lord Chaitanya was in this land of Radha Desh, not actually Radha Desh is originally was Rasta Desh, that land where the Ganges doesn't flow in northern Bengal. There's a district north of Vardhaman district is the Radha Desh district, but it was actually Rasta Desh and later became Radha Desh. So it's not a Radha. Anyway, that Radha Desh, where Lord Chaitanya was roaming, he was not satisfied because he would ask some people, chant, no response. No response. He said, what is this? He said, this land is not good because the Ganges doesn't flow here. He said, wherever the Ganges is present, where Ganga is present, the breezes of Ganga, they make the people chant. Just the breezes coming off the Ganga, the people will make what the people chant. So, like this. So he said, I'm going back to the Ganga. And he turned around and he walked towards the Ganga with great speed, and no one could keep up except for Nityananda. So, and then Lord Chaitanya was just ecstatic, and there were some boys, and he just near the Ganga, and he asked these boys chant, and the boys immediately started chanting, and Lord Chaitanya became totally ecstatic when he heard the holy name. Then Nityananda spoke to the boys and said, you see that sannyasi? The boy said, yes. Nityananda said, he's not okay. And the boy said, yeah. We can see. Yes. Lord Chaitanya said, Nityananda said, when he asks you for the way to Vrindavan, tell him the path along the Ganga. All right, the boy said, yes. All right, you will do. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya asked the way to Vrindavan, and the boy said, Uidike, in Pakka Bengali. In Bengali, you have ADK, that's here, you have OIDK, that's there, and you have UIDK. That's quite far. It's nice. And so they said, UIDK, you know, from a long way along the Ganga. And Lord Chaitanya, he walked along the Ganga, and then, yes, there was a little Acharya. Oh, Acharya! Acharya! How come? What are you doing here in Vrindavan? Yes. But Chaitanya saw the Ganga, thought it was the Yamuna. And Advaita Acharya said, my lord, wherever you are is Vrindavan. And then he said, indeed. Lord Chaitanya then took his bath, and then Advaita Acharya offered him dry cloth and said, you have not eaten for days now, for 3 days you have not begged alms. Please grant me that you will take your first alms in my house. And Lord Chaitanya sort of came to external consciousness. It says, Nityananda has cheated me. He has cheated me. I thought I had come to the Yamuna, but here is the Ganga. He said, no, Advaita Acharya said, actually on this side of the Ganga, the Yamuna flows. The Yamuna also joins here. So actually, you took your bath in the Yamuna. Said, anyway, please come to my house. He took him in a boat across the river, and then Lord Chaitanya came to the house of Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya had quickly sent a message to all the devotees, the Lord has come. They all came really fast. And Mother Sachi also came. She was carried in a palanquin because she was a Brahmin lady. She would not go out in the street just like that. She was carried in a palanquin, curtain, everything closed, right, in this way, private. And then she came to the house. And her son Nimai was there. And then Mother Sachi, she said, please grant me one boon, that I will be the one to do the cooking for as long as you are here. It was granted. And then Mother Sachi, she cooked for Nimai like she had never cooked. She had never cooked like that. She had never cooked with such intense love. She'd always cooked with love for Nimai. But this time she was cooking with intensified love because she knew this is going to be the last time I'm ever going to cook for him. And thus she cooked with so much love. And it was such intense feelings. And then that bhoga which she prepared was offered to the Lord. And after that the devotees were taking prasadam. And that prasadam, there was no prasadam ever like that prasadam. Everyone who ate that prasadam was like just starting to cry tears. Some rolled on the ground. They were ecstatic because there is prasadam in prasadam, if you know what I mean. I mean, you go to the supermarket, you read the label and say, it's okay. Ding, 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 you know. Waffle, waffle, waffle. Prasadam. It's not the same. There is prasadam and prasadam. Right? That which has been offered with love. So that's the point. So in this way, the Vaishnava, the Narayana Para, or the Narayana Parayana, one who is completely absorbed in Lord Narayana, in service to Lord Narayana, with love, yes, he adds his love. It's his love that is the Shakti, that is the power. It's not mystic power. Of course, Vaishnavas have all the mystic power. We read in a biography of Rasikananda. Rasikananda was a disciple of Shamananda. Anyway, came in the lineage of Lord Chaitanya. And Rasikananda, he was preaching in Orissa. Now, if the story is true or not, that I don't know. But it is found in his biography. Yeah. But sometimes, even in old books, there are. See, we think if a book is old, then it must be true. It's old book, that must be true. But even an old book, you can't be sure if it's true, because even in the old days, they would tell stories sometimes, make up a few stories. But anyway, I'll tell you the story, and you can see if you believe it or not. But there was a yogi coming in the village. Ah, yogi, there is a yogi. This yogi, he is so powerful. Everyone was talking about him. He is riding on a tiger. Rasikananda said, yogi riding on a tiger. Very impressive. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, the people said, oh, yes. This yogi is riding on a tiger. Let's go, let's go. We must see it. And Rasikananda, at the time, he was sitting on a wall. That's a boundary wall. And he said, yes, 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 let's go and see the yogi. And he went on his boundary wall. As the yogi was riding on a tiger, Rasikananda was riding on a boundary wall. Huh? You can believe it or not. Old story. Yeah, the wall, I don't know if the whole wall, but at least piece of the wall, was moving along. So that is the story in his biography. It's an ancient story, at least. Now, as I said, whether true or not, the point is, it is possible. It is possible. Because although a Vaishnava is not pursuing mystic power, the Lord will provide him with all mystic powers when he requires. As he requires. So, even such things are not impossible. That is the real point. So we're looking at it, from a philosophical perspective. Not so much that, this thing really happened. Maybe it did, maybe not. But from a philosophical point of view, this is possible. So the empowerment of the devotee is extraordinary. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are, in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, particularly looking at two commentaries of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and one is the commentary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and the other one is the commentary of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, known as the Amrita Prabaha Bhasya. In this Amrita Prabaha Bhasya, there we find a description about empowerment. And it is in the chapter that deals with Nakula Brahmachari, because Nakula Brahmachari became empowered so much that Lord Chaitanya manifested through him. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda is describing what empowerment means. And he said that empowerment means the Sit and Ananda Shakti are manifesting in a devotee. We know that in the spiritual world, everything is Sat, Sit, Ananda, Sat, eternal, Sit, full of knowledge, and Anand, unlimited happiness. Well, as long as we are in the material body, we don't get Sat in the full sense, because the body is not eternal. That's for sure. It's under the influence of time. The soul is not, but the body is, and the mind is. Therefore, the empowerment that a devotee gets is Chit and Anand. He gets knowledge of the Supreme Lord. He gets knowledge of so many energies of the Lord. And finally, he gets complete transcendental happiness. And then there may be lower mystic powers that he also can access. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a lengthy description of mystic powers. And basically, they categorize them. And they say there are mystic powers that come from darkness, that come from the mode of ignorance. You boil the soup and throw in the tail of a lizard. You go to the bank of the river where the cemetery is going, and there you perform some ritual. In Jiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is giving us a novel, and the setting of the novel is approximately 100 years after the disappearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in West Bengal. And it is right there in Navadvip, in the whole Mayapur area, 100 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jiva Dharma it's called. And then there is a group of Vaishnavas. They are followers of the six Goswamis, so they are like Babaji's. They live in Godrum. And they are living in simple huts, and they are very exalted Vaishnavas. In Navadvip, there are many, many Brahmanas who are studying Navanyaya. Nyaya is found in ancient scripture, but when Buddhists came, they started to defeat this system of logic of Nyaya. But in Ayodhya, they developed another type of Nyaya, which is known as Navanyaya. And that the Buddhists could not defeat. So therefore, Navanyaya was becoming very famous. And the pundits of Ayodhya became so famous that they would not allow anyone to take this knowledge out of Ayodhya. The Mittika Brahmanas, oh yes, very famous. But they did teach it, they taught it, but they didn't allow anyone to take any notes. Sorry, Ali, no note taking here. This part. Very sorry. So, Navanyaya, but Vasudev Bhattacharya, he went from Bengal, from Navadvip, and he just memorized the whole thing. He was so brilliant. And therefore he got the title Sarvabhauma, and he became Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So he brought the Navanyaya to Navadvip. And in this way, the Navadvip pundits became even better than the Mithila Brahmanas in this way. Navadvip became a great, great center of learning. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that there was one Vrajanath. And this Vrajanath, he was a noble Brahmana with noble complexion. And he spent all his time in learning of Nyaya. All his time. So then he says that at that time there was another scholar, and he was also very learned, Chudamani. Oh yes, Raghunath Chudamani. But Chudamani, he could defeat everyone except for one, Vrajanath. This Vrajanath was the thorn in his side. This Vrajanath was the problem in his life. If only Vrajanath was not there, he would certainly be the greatest scholar in all of Navadvip, in all of India. Only there was this Vrajanath, So one day, on Amavasya, the dark moon night, he went to the bank of the Ganges, and where the cemetery was, and the burning ghats, and there he took ashes from the bodies that had been burned, and he was offering those ashes in oblations to the fire, to the goddess. And his monks chanting mantra after mantra, and finally he prayed, Oh goddess, I have spent so much time now in making offerings to you. Oh dear goddess, please appear. And then dark clouds assembled in the sky, and suddenly a cold wind was blowing over the plain, over the river bank, and then a female voice came from the sky and said, Raghunath Chudamani, don't worry, your competitor, Vrajanath, very soon will not be your competitor anymore. All right. So it's described like this in Jaya Dharma. It's an exciting book, you know. Really, there are some, this is like serious tantra going on. Oh my God, what's happening? Black, dark rituals. And subsequently, Vrajanath will soon be no more. That is a fact. Because what happens in Jaya Dharma, Vrajanath starts to visit the Vaishnavas in Godrum, and he becomes influenced by them and gradually begins to hear from that. And eventually, one day, Vrajanath found out that Nimai Pandit had been a great scholar of Nyaya, and he was looking for some information about that, you know. And in the course of that, he found some books, and in the course of that, but not much, just a few things written about what Nimai had said. Here and there, some references. And it was really, like, incredible. And then, he found out that Nimai had given it all up and had become a Vaishnava. Thus, he was wondering. And thus, he went to hear from the Vaishnavas. And he became so impressed by that gradually, he became a Vaishnava. And he gave up all this logic. And in this way, Raghunath Chudamani, his competitor was no more. Alright, so like this. So we see there are rituals in darkness, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur described one in detail, and mystic power arising from the mode of ignorance. So in the 11th canto, in the Uddhava Gita, we find descriptions that there is also mystic power arising from Rajagun and also from Sattvagun. And the mystic power from Rajagun is greater than the mystic power from Tamagun. And the mystic power from Sattvagun is greater than the mystic power from Rajagun and Tamagun. But the mystic power of the Lord is still greater. Still greater. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, in the story of Moses, when they were wanting to leave Egypt, right, Moses went before the Pharaoh. The Jews were kept as slaves. And Moses went before the Pharaoh and said, "Let us go." And the Pharaoh says, "No way, no way." Then Moses threw his wooden staff on the ground and it became a snake. So, you know, just to show, like, you know, don't mess with me. You mess with me, you're in trouble, right? Like that, you know. No. Next thing, there were wizards on the that were at the Egyptian court. They also threw their wooden staff on the ground, and they also turned into snakes. But then the snake of Moses ate the other snakes. Because the mystic power coming from God is greater than the mystic power coming from the bonds of nature. And therefore, what was in the Old Testament is correct according to the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Same Siddhanta, correct. And that is completely in line with Srimad Bhagavatam. So in this way, we can understand something about the power of the Vaishnava. But the ultimate power is not his mystic power, although he may have it, but is his love. Why is it so? Because it is said, there are two ways to attain perfection, the monkey way and the cat way. And it said the monkey is holding on, the little monkey is holding on to its mother by the strength of its own little hands. And this mother is jumping on trees and walls. I was watching it in Vrindavan from my room and seeing these little monkeys dangling on the mother, some hanging on the hairs of the mother. And the mother is like taking serious jumps, you know. So, risky. And said, but then there's the kitten. The kitten is being lifted by the superior strength of the mother. So it is said, the yogi is trying on the strength of his own power to elevate himself. But the devotee is simply depending on the more superior power of the Supreme Lord. And that the Supreme Lord may take us back to Godhead. Yogi, see, a proper yogi, not some bogus yogi, but a proper yogi is one who can control the senses, one who can control the mind, one who can achieve mystic powers. Then one of the mystic powers is Lagima. Lagima means that one can travel on the rays of the sun. One can become weightless and one can travel on the rays of the sun, or one can also travel on water. Through water, and they can go underwater in one place in the Ganga and re-emerge 1,000 kilometers away. So in this way they can do all the major tirthas in India just in one day. And they just go in. Or they can travel on the rays of the sun, and thus they through Lagima City, and they can travel to other planets. And they can elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. But what happens when you get there? So the ladies on these heavenly planets, they are beautiful. Oh, they are so beautiful. They can bewilder the mind of any man. Such is the case. Compared to that, the beauty in this world. So, therefore, some yogis, when they come to the heavenly planets, they'll stay here. This is too good.
too good. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. I'm moving in. Yeah? In this way. Australian yogi, yeah. Right, yeah, I'm not going anywhere now. I'm staying here. Enjoying it. Give me some of that rice, mate. Give me some of that juice, right? Give us the juice. Anyway, in this way, enjoying the heavenly planets. And the yogi gets completely distracted from his goal. Therefore, it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this mystic power is like a big black python. A big black python can swallow a whole man. We read that Nanda Maharaj was being swallowed by such a python. And only when Krishna, they were beating the python with burning sticks, still didn't work. Nanda Maharaj was going inside. But when Krishna kicked that python, then it left its body and Nanda Maharaj was saved. The python turned to a Vijayadara who had been cursed and needed the touch of Krishna's lotus feet to become liberated from the curse. Yes, we can hear all these things. Anyway, the point is that this mystic power is like a python. It can swallow us. So, although one is originally performed as a yogi, performing tapasya, to get the mystic power to achieve the goal of elevating oneself to higher planetary systems, to swarga, and then beyond, to the planets of the sages, the jana maha tapa lokas. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it is the jana and maha tapa lokas are described. And then it says that on the Jana Loka, there are the Prajapatis. You know, these Prajapatis, they are very pious personalities, and they are performing tapas to get perfect offspring, because they are instruments of Lord Brahma to populate the universe. And their main business is to perform austerity, purify themselves most of the time. So, whereas in Swarg, it's all about enjoying. So they are doing tapas. Then further are the planets of the great sages on the Mahaloka. These sages are there performing austerity. We go still higher. We come to Tapaloka, which is the abode of the Brahmacharis. And there the presiding lords are the four Kumaras. And then higher still is Brahmaloka, where, you know, the sannyasis may go, it is said. Those who don't go back to God, good. The Mayavad sannyasis, they may attain Brahmaloka. Anyway, and from there, at the end, there one can live a very long time, and one is constantly performing spiritual activity. Then at the end of a proper life in Brahmaloka, one can go back. So in this way, the yogi is like going the slow way, trying to slowly go up to higher planetary systems, and then from there, finally elevate himself. If he doesn't get deviated on the way, if he doesn't get distracted by some means or other, and develop some material desire. So that is a troublesome process, and in this age, practically impossible. Who can? Still, there may be some exceptional souls in the Himalayas or some places who are actually qualified yogis. They exist. They do exist. But otherwise, the norm in this age of Kali is bogi yogi. Yogi Bogananda, and we have seen many plays in this regard. So, you know, bogi yogis, I'm sure. Yogi Dev can do a few bogey yogis. Yes.
that we look at this at mystic powers and we're not so impressed. Before Krishna consciousness, I went to Benares and Varanasi, and I was practicing meditation. And so one day, I'm meditating on the Ganga, and I'm just sitting there. Earth, water, fire was also somewhere there. Ether, you know, all the elements, air, ether, all the elements were there. I was in deep meditation and just looking at one point in the water. And then, after about 20 minutes, a dolphin jumped from my point. I go, wow. I'm self-realized. This is amazing. This is amazing. You know, I mean, like, my point, you know, 20 minutes, I'm looking at my point, and this dolphin jumps right out of the point. Wow. I'm self-realized. This is it. But then, you know, I was walking around for a few days, and go, okay, but what does it mean, you know? What is the meaning of this dolphin coming out of my point, you know? What do I make of it? And, I mean, it wore out and I was still the same old, you know, the same old I ever was. So, what to do? So, all these things, like mystic powers, what is the value? Also in Benares, I saw one yogi who in front of a crowd just opened his hand and a colorful bird flew out. I saw it. And all the people saw it also. Everyone saw it. What to say? Yes. Sometimes yogis may be able to do such things. Many things. And these things look very impressive. At the time, I was a bit impressed. You know, I was shocked, say the least. Right? But all these things, right, are not spiritual. They are material powers. Nothing compared to the power of Durvasa Muni. One magician came to Vrindavan and met Prabhupada in his room. And he did all kinds of tricks. And then he made things disappear. And then he took a coin and it looked like he put it in Prabhupada's ear and then it disappeared. And, you know, some of the devotees thought, this is not respectful, how can you do this? Yeah. But Prabhupada was enjoying the show, and very nice. And Prabhupada said, yes, you can make all these things disappear. Yes. Then Prabhupada said, you can make birth and death disappear. He said, no, that I can't. Prabhupada said, that I can't do. Just to understand these tricks, right, that look so impressive, what's the meaning of it? Many years ago, I was here in Australia, and around Christmas time, I was selling candles to collect money for the temple. And we had been on top of a mountain, and we'd come down and over a very dusty dirt road. When we came down, there was a small town and there was a Christmas party going on. And there were about 100 people on the fire engine. They were all on top of the fire engine driving through the town. And then they stopped in front of a local pub. So I said, okay, I'm gonna do that pub. And so I'll sell the candles there. I went inside and all the people were in party spirit completely. And I said, I put my box with candles on the bar and I said, surprise! Right? I look in the box and it was full with dust because the dust from the dirt road had gone into the box. And then out of a reflex, I blew in the box to blow the dirt off.
And a big cloud of smoke came out of my box.
And all the people go like,
wow!
You know, that was a real surprise. I said, surprise! I blow, and smoke comes out of my box. I got an applause. It was an accident, you know. Anyway, I got an applause, and I sold all the candles. Somehow or another, Krishna helps sometimes, you know, when we are collecting for the temple. Right? Yeah, what can I say? It was like that. Everyone thought he has mystic power, you know. But just some cheap trick, you know, little dust in the box. So like that, even if one has mystic power, still, it's not very significant. I'll end with a Russian story from Dostoevsky, right, who was saying there was this, this is in Russian setting, so in the old days they were very Christian, Orthodox Christian. And it said that in Russia there were many hermits who would live alone and practice their religion, you know, in great austerities and so on. They're famous for that. So there was a bishop, and he was traveling by ship, and they came past an island, and the captain said, on this island there are three sages, and these sages, right, they are very, very advanced. So the bishop said, oh, I want to meet them. I want to meet them. So the bishop got a boat, and he went to the island, and he met the sages. So he thought, let me ask a question to the sages. So he asked the question to the sages, and he asked them, what prayer are you chanting? What is the prayer you are chanting? Thinking that they must have a very powerful prayer. And then they had some very simple thing, you know, we are three, you know, something like that. We are three, and you just... please bless us, something simple like that, you know. We are 3-4-D, and please bless us, something like that. And then, the bishop was thinking, they don't even know how to pray properly. These people are very simple. I'll teach them the mantra, right? I'll teach them. And he was teaching them a proper prayer, you know, according to biblical literature, you know. And these people, they were so simple, they couldn't get it. So it took the bishop hours and hours, and you know, he had them to repeat it. They were repeating it again and again. And then, you know, okay, finally the bishop left, you know, I was thinking, well, yeah. They're actually very simple men, but you know, they have some big reputation, because the people, they are like that, you know. And they make anybody into great saints, you know what I'm saying? But these people don't even know basic prayers. You know? Anyway, then the bishop was back on the ship, and the ship was going away to its horizon. And then they suddenly saw, at a distance, on the horizon, they saw something was coming with great speed towards the ship. So what is this? What is this? And when it was coming closer, it could see it were the three sages. And they were moving very fast over the water. And they came to the ship, and they said to the bishop, what was that prayer again? Russian story. So I think the point is clear. It's like bhakti as the greatest power. Because it is based on love, loving devotional service. So, thank you very much. Any questions? Any comentarios de la cocina?
Right, sometimes at the bottom I think, well, if I did have mystic powers, I could use them in Krishna's service.
Hey, yeah. Yeah. sit here and all the money from the bank flies to Canberra Temple.
So, is that a legitimate desire?
Well, it's like, when we think if I had mystic powers, I could use them for Krishna. Then we think, we approach the situation too much from the platform of the doer. I am the doer. And so, let me be the doer, let me get mystic powers, and I'll do something big. But a Vaishnava is not going to waste his time with that, because he knows that Krishna is bigger. And therefore, let me please Krishna, and Krishna do something big. Like here, that is the story of the sparrow losing the eggs in the ocean. You know, the famous story, the sparrow lost its eggs in the ocean, then the little sparrow says to the ocean, give those eggs back or I will drink all your water. The ocean didn't bother to reply. Then Garuda, who heard about this, came, and because he became attracted by the sincerity of that little sparrow, and Garuda said, I will drink the water. So this is the principle of preaching Krishna consciousness, is we are sparrows, we are pecking away at the ocean, and it looks like we'll never, never do it. How can we drink the ocean? You know, I mean, we little sparrows, even we're not one, even we are like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 in this room. 13 and a bunch in the kitchen, right? 13, you know, that's us. And we're, and plus the kitchen, and we're going to drink the ocean. Come on, you know, be real. You can't do it. No, that's true. It's like, one scholar was had studied ISKCON for many years and then wrote, you know, one thing is certain. ISKCON has passed the test of time. It is here to stay. But, you know, it's not that they're just going to take over the world. And that was an academic accession. But I tell you one thing, oh, dear academic, ISKCON is going to take over the world. It will. If we just are sincere enough and keep pecking away at the drops of the ocean, then one day Krishna will come and he'll do something miraculous. And Krishna's miracles are greater than all the miracles, you know, that, you know, our ayogi our local yogi could ever possibly realize that. Yeah. Even if you can levitate, you know. It's like Bhakta used to tell us, right? You know, it's like his friend is Bhakta. Bhakta is a mountain of a man. And they used to do plays together. But Bhakta, before Krishna consciousness, he was doing transcendental meditation with the Maharishi. And they learned how to levitate. They actually got off the ground. 1 foot sometimes. But the problem was the landing was not always soft. It'll go up in the sky and then land. And some of them did their spine in. So they have permanent back problems from all the hopping. They used to call it hopping. Yeah? The levitation. So, all right, you know. So watch out with this yoga. You know, you might do your back in. Yeah? In Australia, you have like the flying doctor, right? And you know, even if you live somewhere out on some station in the whoop whoops, right?
If you live in heaven, the whoops are in the States, right? No worries, right? The blob will just fly over, find a landing strip and save a life, isn't it, darling? That's the way it goes. Out in the bush. Right? Flying doctors. Australia's famous for that. And that's a good thing. So we have, as struggling devotees, have a problem. And that is our enthusiasm in spiritual life is like a slow leaking car tire. Have you ever had a slow leaking car tire? You know, the air is going out, but you can still pump it up and chalega. Chalega. You can still drive, but you know, one of these days I have to get it fixed, you know. But like that, slow leaking car tire. So we have the slow leaking car tire of our enthusiasm. It's just leaking out. But here is the flying doctor, you know. Sankirtan man is in town. And he'll pump up our enthusiasm. And yes, yes, I feel it. I feel enlightened. I want to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. It's so ecstatic, emotional service. 3 days after the Swami left, back to misery. I chant my rounds. Like that, right? This is the situation. But this is not what it's about. Association with the Vaishnava is not meant for the purpose of pumping up our slow leaking tire. No, no, no. It is, yes, a Vaishnava in by his presence will give us so much inspiration. When Srila Prabhupada came, people were so inspired. The devotees, they were on fire. They were like, they could do anything in his presence. But later it became more difficult after he left the planet. The struggle, there's more struggle then. Yes. But that's not all. The Vaishnava will give us that inspiration. But he also gives us knowledge how we can help ourselves. So it's not just that the flying doctor flies in and say, next time you got a cold, just call me again and I come flying in again. No, the flying doctor gives you a help yourself kit, you know, and says, well, next time you have this problem, this and this and this is what you do so you can take care of it. So he gives us instruction. And that is more important, because more important than the Vapu gives us that lift and that inspiration. But more important is the Vani. Why is it? Because the Vani will stay with us. Because the Vapu will be with us for some time and give the personal form is Vapu. Vani is instruction. The personal form is with us for some time. But the Vani is what really does it. So at the end of the day, see, if Krishna desired, he could just, you know, he could just change the world in just a moment. And suddenly, everyone would wake up in ecstasy. And suddenly everyone would start dancing, Krishna, 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 Krishna. If Krishna wants, he can do. But that's not what Krishna wants. Krishna wants that people surrender on their own. So he sends his agent who gives some inspiration. But we have to do it. We have to do it. At the end of the day, we have to overcome. Oh Arjuna, your bow is slipping from your hand. Oh, don't succumb to this weakness. Oh Arjuna, it is not befitting a man like you. Oh Arjuna, you have this knowledge. Now you must act. Fight your battle. Fight your battle. That's the message of the Gita. Fight your battle. Fight it. Face it. Don't stick your head in the sand. Fight your battle.
getting late, so I thank you.